Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Well, we get to spend the next hour with this guy talking Seahawks football. You know him, you love him. He is Michael Bumpus. What's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing?
Good. It's good to have you with us, and obviously there's much to discuss here. And I know you wrote a piece. You can find it at 710sports.com, talking about the OC search, the offensive coordinator search for the Seahawks is ongoing. We're hearing a lot of different names. But one name you've identified, and I actually asked Dave yesterday about this guy, Mr. Canales. What is it you like about him? What is it you feel that people maybe don't know about him? Because I think we talk obviously a lot about Shoddy and Norton and Pete, of course, but we don't. Once you start getting further down the road into, you know, passing game coordinators, run game coordinators, they're not as familiar to people.
Yeah, and you know, I appreciate you guys letting me talk about this because people were lighting me up on Twitter about this Canales dude. And I simply think it's because they don't know who he is.
Yeah.
And people are getting caught up in the big names. And these guys get recycled, right? Gase gets recycled. Flynn's going to get a job. And good for them. They paid their dues. They're in the league for a while. But I'm looking for young blood. And I'm looking for young blood, but a guy who's been around. You look at Canales at USC. He was with Pete Carroll, 2010 through 17, he was the receivers coach. So he was there when run game was a priority. He understands what the run game is supposed to look like. He understands how the receivers fit into that run game. From 2018 to 19, he was a quarterback coach. Russell Wilson had 31, 35 touchdowns, 5-7 picks. So he showed, look, okay, I can handle the receivers, run game, pass game. I also know the quarterback position. I helped Russell Wilson out. And then this past year, he's been the passing coordinator. He's climbed, man. He's grinded. Azusa Pacific, I mean, I dove deep into this guy and just kind of really figure out who he is. And I think it's time for the league just to get new blood in, man. It's a fraternity. Once you are a coach in the NFL, you can coach for 30 years if you want to, at some capacity doing something. And I like that he understands Pete, what he likes, what he doesn't like. He's been there when run was heavy, when pass was heavy. And I think he can bring new ideas to the table. And I also think that Pete trusts him. And when you trust a guy, you allow him to really do his thing. He's probably not going to get the nod, but I think his name needs to be mentioned. That's why I hollered at him.
Oh, now, why do you say he's probably not going to get it? What do you think, Bob? Do you think it's just because... go ahead.
I think, Dave, I think it's because even though management and ownership doesn't, they're not going to say it. I mean, they don't want to disappoint fans either. They need to justify a move to where the masses kind of understand what's going on. And it's easier to go with a guy who's been in the league for a while. That's the safe pick. That's the safe thing to do. It's rare that you see a guy get promoted from a rise through the ranks like the D3, the defensive coordinator over there for the Rams, who's now going to be a head coach. It's rare that you see that. So I'm looking for the Hawks just to roll the dice, but I don't think they will because there are bigger names out there.
Yeah, when you hear that story of Brandon Staley, the first thing I think is that dude must be, like, magical. Like, in a meeting, yeah. You know? I mean, and I think a lot of people think, well, that's, you know, that's not right, or favoritism, whatever you think it is. To me, it says this guy must have unbelievable chops. And then, you know, the other thing is, I guess I asked you that question, Bump, about Canales, and I guess I would answer it this way, and you nailed it. When it comes to the management and the ownership, with your fans and the connection and everything, how is it going to look if you hire somebody from within? You know, if you don't go outside. And then the other thing I would say just is that if you have the chops to do so, how come you haven't been chiming in? I mean, they know, like, I don't know. It just seems like he could have maybe he fixed a few things. You know, if that's the case, then, and you know that he has the ability to, hey, we need to go more up tempo. That was my idea. You know, any things that worked that were his idea, then you could say, okay, that's how I'm going to go out and tell everybody. But yeah, it just seems like it needs to be one of these people that not only just kind of wows you in a meeting. Like, I don't know if you heard, Bump, when we had Brock on, he was talking about when this guy came and interviewed this Brandon Staley down in with the Rams and Sean McVay, and he talked for 10 hours straight about football. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it needs to be some guy like that that comes in here and just wows Pete, because, you know, like, Pete's kind of a little bit behind the eight ball just because he's a defensive coach. So he really, you know, Andy Reid, I mean, you know, Bruce Arians, those guys all have, you know, the offensive background. So it's not as critical that you get somebody in here that's really, really good and really knows offense.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Dave, and that's part of the process. You got to be able to walk in a room and get guys to believe in you, right?
Whether
and that's in football in general. You walk into a locker room as a player. Jamal Adams had to get guys to believe. Same thing when it comes to coaching. So, you know, can he do that? I don't know. You know, how involved was he in the passing game, in game planning, in adjustments during a football game? I don't know. You know, we weren't on the sidelines. We aren't in the meeting rooms when all that goes down. I just look on paper and I say, okay, this guy deserves a chance somewhere, whether it be here or somewhere else. He's paid his dues. And if he has been involved in the passing game this past year, there's two ways we can look at it now, right? You know, was he the first half guy or was he the second half guy? You know, how much input did he have in both of those scenarios? There's a lot of questions, right? And a lot of things go into the decision making, especially when it comes to be a coordinator. I'm down for the movement of bringing young guys in or just different guys in and giving them a shot.
Well, let's back up for a moment and get your take on the move that was made. I think you were probably surprised, as most people were, that Shoddy was let go. When you look at what happened to the offense, the first half was unlike any offense they had ever had in a good way with this team. They set a record for points scored. You had record setters in DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And then things went south. So if you're cutting up the blame pie, who gets the biggest piece? Because it really comes down to the coaching staff that includes Pete and Shoddy. Russell Wilson has taken a lot of heat. The play calling itself, what do you see as the biggest problem?
I mean, no matter how you put it, the offensive coordinator and the quarterback are going to get most of the blame for it. So now we're trying to see, okay, out of those two, who gets most of the blame? And this is just my opinion after watching film, watching the All 22. I have people challenge me all the time. I'm like, I guarantee you, you're not watching as much film as me. If you are, you need to be on 710. You got to be on TV because you're putting in work, man. I look at it and I put most of the blame on Shoddy, and simply because I didn't see, say for like a 3rd and 5 situation, there was a 3rd and 6 their very last game, and I'm just like, okay, I'm going to look at every 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 and see what plays are being called. And 8 out of 10 times, there's no quick game or outlet for Russell Wilson. It's like they're going past the sticks. They're going 10 or 15 yards past the sticks, where I'm like, hold on, you don't need that. All you need is 7, 8 yards, 6, you know, 5, 6 yards to get this first down. And Russell has a tendency to hold on to the football, but I'm also thinking, or from what I've seen, that he's holding on because he's waiting for things to develop. Has Russell made mistakes? Yes. Nobody is perfect, so he gets some of that blame as well. He's a leader. He's making $35 million. He probably should. But I look at the play calling, and I'm like, it doesn't make sense for this situation. And so that's why I think Shoddy gets most of the blame.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a great point there about some of the routes that were being run, because if it's 3rd and 5, I'm hitting Chris Carson with a 1 yard pass and gambling on him in open space. And they had the guys to do that. I mean, maybe you don't think David Moore. I mean, I think David Moore is pretty creative running the ball. I said he kind of reminded me a little bit of Jermaine Kearse, a little bit of Golden Tate, where he becomes, you know, a running back. But I mean, you've got Tyler Lockett, you got DK Metcalf, you got Chris Carson. I'll take those guys in space. So why wasn't there, you know, opportunities like they had early on where they were checking it down a little bit? I mean, especially to Carson, to me, that's mm-hmm. that's the big failing. And, you know, to me, you know, those guys, Carson, just ahead of steam, gets him a first down on mm-hmm. 3rd and 5. But, you know, maybe he breaks a tackle and it goes for 20. So, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's tough. I bet you you're probably struggling with it, Bump, because you go back and, you know, you're second guessing everything. But when you start to see a pattern of, you know, what's going down, then that's what, you know, what would you like to see? Bob always talks about tempo. and you know, and the up tempo stuff. And we see Aaron Rodgers doing that and has a ton of success. He does a really good job with that.
Just mixing it up, Bump. I just want to see him mix it up and not become so caught in a particular rhythm.
Yeah. What about you? What's something that you'd like to see, Bump?
I feel I like the tempo, and when we say tempo, I like speeding it up and slowing it down.
Yeah.
People just think of speeding it up.
So, mix it up. Keep the defense on their heels.
Yep, I love it. I love it, especially when they get into a personnel group. It's kind of like when I play my son in Madden, and he picks like just a garbage play on defense, and I have the right offense. I'm hurrying up all day. I'm like, Pops, you are not getting out of this defense. I got you. Call a timeout. But I'd like to see the tempo, and then I want to see plays where you are getting the ball into your playmaker's hand and letting them go. Let DK run. Let Demo run. Let Lockett run. Like you talked about, Dave, with the check down and Carson getting – full steam ahead and getting 5 or 6 yards, because it seems like most of the throws are, okay, we're going to get most of this yardage through the air. When you really have guys on your team, well, if you get them the ball, they're going to get 10 yards yak, 12 yards yak sometimes, and you still get those yards, that offense still looks good. So just quicker plays. And then a San Francisco type offense where they're crossing and guys are cashing it at 5, 6 yards, they're turning it upfield. I think they have the personnel to run an offense like that.
What do you think, and you talked about the quarterback getting most of the blame, and that's true. They get the credit, they get the blame. We're seeing it at a different level here. I'm seeing, and I know you've seen this as well, Bump, especially with the news around Deshaun Watson being unhappy. He wants out of Houston. Now everybody's trying to figure out where he's going to land, and automatically we start seeing the tweets and the texts, and I think it's obviously coming from the minority of Seahawks fans, but it's out there. Trade Russell Wilson. Trade him. Get Deshaun Watson here. What do you think when you read that stuff?
Man, I think y'all are crazy. Not you, Bob and Dave. I think people out there are nuts. And I understand why it's attractive. You see Deshaun Watson. He's a young quarterback. He's mobile. He reminds you a bit of Russell in his early days. And you automatically think that he's just playing better football. He's just not on the greatest team. And he has been playing good football. The past 14 years, he's around 14,000 yards. Russell's around 15,000 last 4 years. He's got 104 touchdowns. Russ has 140. They both have 36 interceptions. So they're comparable. I get it. And I think people fall in love with the next best thing. And you got to realize that Russell has been consistent. He didn't have a great end to the year, but he still had a pretty good year. 40 touchdowns. 13 interceptions, and you still feel like you have a chance with Russell Wilson. And you look at Deshaun Watson, they're comparable, they can run the ball, all that good stuff, but people are forgetting what Russell means to this organization and this city. Like, if you want to go numbers, Russell still has them. Now let's go just to loyalty and just being patient a bit with guys and kind of working through things. And I think people forget that. So you guys in Seattle who are going nuts, talking about Russ is done, it's over. This next offensive coordinator is going to be huge. Russ is going to have his hands all over this next pick. He'll get a guy that he wants to be in here. And then we'll really see, I think, the full potential of Russell Wilson. And if that doesn't work out, then I guess you go your own ways. But at this point, one horrible end to a season doesn't mean you forget what this dude's done for 8-9 years.
Sure it does. Yeah, it does, Bump. I mean, okay, let's summarize. He's a third-round draft choice. He comes in. He's too short. Okay, yeah. And then, okay, he's a game manager. Then he becomes really good, and we all see it, but the national media doesn't. And they come in, and this is last year's offseason, say they're actively subverting Russell. This guy's a pure talent. You know, you got to surround him with. And then he goes out and lights it up, and then something happens midseason. We don't know exactly what. It was a lot of different things. And now he's too short again. And he should be fired. And he should be traded. It's unbelievable. I don't know. I mean, I understand quarterbacks are, it's a different position. They're just the most scrutinized players by far. They get all the money. They get all the blame. They get all the credit. But I don't know if there's anybody that's more of a lightning rod than Russell Wilson. And I think it goes back to him not looking like your classic quarterback that's 6'4". How tall is Watson? Is he 6'3", 6'4", Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
Something like that?
6'3", 6'4", yep.
I honestly think it goes back to that. And that's where people go back to it in their minds. But I'm just, you know, I don't know. I'm not sure if there's a – if you look at like this on a chart, I mean, this is like up and down and up and down. I mean, I it just seems like other quarterbacks get kind of a steady, you know, flow of criticism and praise, whereas Russ goes from one extreme to the other.
Yep, I'm with you. And it's unfortunate. And it's a mix of all the things you said about the media not really paying attention. And then once they do pay attention, Russ cannot mess up at all. He just can't mess up at all. And you're right. I mean, Tom Brady has gotten his fair share of criticism. Breeze, all these guys do, and they should. But a guy threw 40 touchdowns, broke a franchise record, his own franchise record when it comes to throwing touchdowns. He's in every single game, 32 fourth quarter comebacks. He leads the league since he's been in the league. He's been to the playoffs. Yeah, let's be disappointed, but let's not be crazy here, folks. This is still one of the top five quarterbacks in the league. And if you want to roll the dice on Deshaun Watson, I understand why you're thinking about it, but let's not fall into that and remember the good times. These next 3 years are important. After these next 3 years, and we'll figure something out.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that we've forgotten about him to mention is his incredible durability. And the guy has not missed a snap. Well, maybe a snap or two, but he has never missed a practice. And, you know, the guy's been sacked quite a bit. And also, he's the kind of guy that a couple of years ago, Rabel and I started doing a Russell Wilson stat of the week because O'Connell would put, who's the, you know, director of communications for the broadcasts and everything down there, you know, he would put this page of Russell Wilson things. And I think you said, I think it's 34 now. Overtime and comeback wins, fourth quarter and overtime comeback wins. You know, the number of wins, he's got 93, I believe, in the regular season. And so, I mean, in all of these things, all of these stats, started to look at them and we're like, these are up there with Peyton Manning and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees and sometimes, you know, John Elway, Dan Marino. Mm-hmm. I mean, all kinds of, you know, of those types of things. So he's just very underappreciated. But then also he's just a winner. And, you know, so I would just say anybody that's listening to my voice, you know, calm down on the Russell Wilson criticism. I mean, he is, it's not like it all of a sudden changed. I mean, he wasn't happy. And you could tell there were some play calls that you could tell he was, I mean, he looked beat up after that game when he came out late for that press conference where, you know, him and Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll were talking, and it looked like he felt bad about, you know, what's going on there, but he just looked frustrated, and he's looked like that a lot this year in the second half of the season. So, yeah, whoever can take the best of what that was, like you said, Bump, you know, first half versus second half, who was the first half guy? Figure that out, and then, you know, maybe you can, you know, take away some of the things that went on in the second half and help him out, man, because this guy is, look, nothing's changed about Russell Wilson.
Yeah, he Bump, one thing Jake told us when he was on is that they sort of took things off his plate in an attempt to make it easier, to simplify it. They took away some of his leeway, his ability to change plays at the line of scrimmage, to have some level of autonomy out there from the first half to the second half. And it doesn't appear he was really happy with that, as much as maybe they looked at it as, hey, let's make it easier. We're starting to turn the ball over. Let's you know, remove some of this clutter, if you will, and take that part away. I don't think he loved that. I think he liked having a certain level of control up there at the line of scrimmage that apparently he didn't have in the second half. What do you make of that?
Yeah, if you're taking stuff off of Russell Wilson's plate, there's some trust issues there, and I don't understand why there would be trust issues. And if they did take some stuff off his plate, it was during the middle of the season when things started going bad, right? And Russell, I feel like, has reached a point in his career where he should be able to walk up to the line of scrimmage and move things around and put his offense in a position to succeed. Now, if he's in the meeting room and him and Shadi aren't on the same page, then maybe that's a reason why they took something off his plate. They weren't connecting or seeing things the right way. But there was a play Aaron Rodgers made against the goodness, who they play this week? The Rams. They played against the Rams. That touchdown he threw to pretty much seal the game. And did you see there was a close up where Aaron is scanning the defense and
he kind of winks, he smiled,
and he starts to smile. He's like, man, I know exactly what's going down here. I think that's the level of comfort in what you're seeing. I feel like, I guess Russell has to show, or had to show, to Shadi for him to have control, because Aaron has control of that offense. And is he there yet? I don't know. Maybe he's a year or two away. I'm not sure, but with all he's done, all the records he's broken, all the numbers he's put up, I feel like you have to give this man the keys to the car and let him go.
You know, I was going to say that reminds me, it kind of brings back the Minnesota playoff game where the snap went over Russell's head. It was in the cold in 2016, I believe. And remember, he had his mouthpiece in his hand. And so as he's turning around to run back and pick up that fumble, he puts his mouthpiece in very methodically. Then he gets the ball. Then he assesses the pass rush. And then he turns around and finds, you know, that was kind of his Aaron Rodgers moment. And that's when I started to think that there's something really special about Russell that, you know, and obviously thought he was great going up to that point. But Bob and I were talking yesterday about, Bob was quite outraged that they brought in Adam Gase to look at, and he's still fuming over it. But
don't get it, Bump.
Yeah, but what do you think? My explanation was, well, they're looking for, first of all, I think it's a very much of a long shot that they hire him, but it just seems like that's just, they're going to kick the tires on, or Bob says that that's one tire that doesn't need to be kicked.
That's one that hasn't earned the right to be kicked.
That's what you said, yeah. Hasn't earned the right to be kicked, but where were you on that one?
Man, if they're looking at Gase, they better be looking at Canales. Light me up if you want to, Twitter. They better be. But I look at his record. He's 32-48 as a head coach. He's got one winning season. His best seasons, 2013, 2014. Who was his quarterback? He had Peyton Manning, number one offense in the nation, in the NFL. He also had a run game going with Moreno, who rushed 4,000 yards. But then after that, he kind of fell off. He went to Chicago. He had Jay Cutler. They were okay. They were 21st overall. So it's kind of like he's still riding the wave of 2013, 2014. That's a perfect example of how guys get recycled in this league. Oh my God, he has the best offense in the NFL, bro. That was 7 years ago. You know what I mean? That's not, he didn't have the same personnel. He didn't have the same quarterback. I think you take a look at him because that's what you do in the NFL. You look at guys who have had success, but you cannot get Gase in here. If you really want to lose the 12s and everything that's going on, you don't bring Gase in here. I understand why they look at him. I'm sure he's a good mind. He has great ideas, and he wouldn't be the leader of this football team. Maybe he's better off as the number two or number three guy. I just don't think you can bring him in. He probably will get another shot. He probably deserves another shot as an OC, but not here.
Maybe they can get all of these guys that they bring in to just kind of spill their entire playbook
and then
just record it.
Yeah.
Just record it and then say, you know what? We're good. We don't need anybody. We got all these ideas and we'll let Dave Canales run this.
Yeah, that was one bump where I'm on board with, hey, you talk to everybody, kick the tires, see what, maybe there's somebody that nobody's talking about or paying attention to that's a diamond in the rough. I don't feel that way about Gase, and you chronicled why. He had that season with Peyton Manning in that historic offense, and then he went to the Bears. I think they were 23rd or 24th in the league that year in points scored per game. And then he went to the Dolphins, where all of a sudden Tannehill is no good. He can't do anything with the Dolphins. They're no good there. Tannehill moves on and all of a sudden becomes a really good quarterback for the Tennessee Titans, so that's an indictment on him. Then you go to the Jets, who I understand are completely dysfunctional, but he didn't seem to help it, and the players just openly had disrespect for him in public, in the press. And we heard about, I can't imagine how happy Jamal Adams would be to have him in the building. None of it made sense to me. It's not don't talk to people. It's just, why would you talk to that one particular guy who, in my opinion, hasn't earned the conversation?
Because they look at everybody. Bob, really, his problem is he doesn't like his eyes.
Well, there's that, too.
He doesn't like the eyeballs.
He doesn't fill me with any level of confidence.
Do you ever see the one thing, maybe it was on Twitter, where there was like a little taco that was bouncing around?
Yeah, and his eyes were following
his eyes went.
That's awesome. Yeah, he hasn't earned the conversation, in my opinion. But we'll move on.
He's got to sit for a year or two.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, coming up, what did you learn about where the Seahawks need to be watching that Packers-Rams game? Did we take anything away as far as what the Seahawks need to do? We'll get into that next as Michael Bumpus sits in this hour with us here. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Tonight from 7 to 9, we're firing up the Mariners conversation. The Hot Stove. Join the voices of Mariners baseball tonight from 7 to 9 for the Hot Stove Show.
Going, goodbye baseball.
Player interviews,
scouts, prospect profiles, free agent targets. It's the one-stop shop for everything Mariners leading up to spring training.
We can see that big step that leads us into a really exciting stage in Mariners baseball.
Exclusively on the home of the Mariners, 710 ESPN Seattle. You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Oswego Mortgage. Michael Bump is sitting in with us for the hour talking Seahawks football. And Bump, I think most Seattle fans were keenly tuned in to the Packers-Rams matchup just to see how the Rams would look against the Packers versus how they looked against the Seahawks. And, you know, we walked away from that with a few things. Dave and I went over a whole bunch of it yesterday, feeling a little worse about the Seahawks. In particular, for me, I felt much worse about the play of the offensive line. I thought they were the best line they've had in years to start the season for the first half. Russell had all day. I thought a lot of the sacks that happened were his fault for hanging on to the ball so long because he had so much time. That changed about maybe the last month of the season. I know there were injuries on the line. You thought everybody coming back healthy for this Rams game would have been a huge key for him, and they got demolished. How do you feel? What was your takeaway? Did you see that with the line, or was there something else that stuck out to you after watching the Packers-Rams matchup?
Oh, man, I share the same feelings with you. I mean, Aaron Rodgers wasn't sacked once. Not one time was he sacked. Now, and Aaron Rodgers is an elusive guy. I will call Russell Wilson more elusive, but Aaron Rodgers is an elusive guy. He got outside the pocket and made things happen, but he didn't get sacked once. And I looked at that offense and I go, this is exactly what Pete Carroll wants for the Hawks. This is it right here. I mean, he threw it 36 times. They rushed it 36 times. Threw for 296, two touchdowns. They ran for 188 yards and two touchdowns. They were good on third downs. Now, Aaron Rodgers is funny because he rushed for, what, negative 2 yards, I want to say, but he still scored a touchdown. But throughout the game, it felt like he was just ready to break one. He was going to break one. He's going to break one, a 10 or 15-yard run. And I think that's what Russell Wilson can do if he's used the right way. So the fact that they were able to stop this Rams defense from getting after the quarterback, Aaron Donald was banged up. We can't ignore that. He wasn't 100%. But Leonard Floyd didn't have the day that he seems to have every time he plays against the Hawks. Jalen Ramsey made a couple of plays, but nothing crazy. The Rams were just able to call plays to keep this Rams defense on their heels. And at no point during that last matchup between the Seahawks and the Rams did I feel like the Hawks were able to do that.
Bob, how many times did you say they sacked Russell this year? Was it
3 meetings, 16 times they sacked Good. Russell Wilson, Bump.
Nice.
16 times just in the 3 games against the Rams. That's unacceptable. Unacceptable.
It's brutal. Yeah. Well, I mean, Russ did hurt Aaron Donald with his butt.
He did. He did, but they got worked even when he was out of the game.
Yeah.
Remember, you thought, okay, they caught a break. You don't want to see guys get hurt, but Russell falls on him, hurts his ribs, he's out of the game, and they were still getting tortured.
And Green Bay without their all-pro
left
offensive tackle
yeah.
and Bakhtiari, and they had a guard in there that was all-pro or in the Pro Bowl anyway. So, yeah, that was incredibly discouraging. This week, Bump, I'm doing a thing on, a little bit to do with the Patrick Mahomes concussion and just about, like, if that linebacker, Mac Wilson, if he could have very easily hit Patrick Mahomes in the helmet with his helmet. Yeah. The fact that his helmet missed Mahomes' helmet, I think, is an accident or just a happenstance. I mean, it could have easily been. And then everybody would have just been killing him, but he's already getting, and one by Mahomes' mother. She sent a tweet that was like, it was a garbage play, everything. There was nothing wrong with what Mac Wilson did there.
He didn't even hit him. He tackled him.
Yeah.
There was no hit.
Just tackled him. I don't think it was even the ground
nothing touched
hit.
His helmet. Nothing.
Although, I'll say this, that, whenever they ask who's the hardest hitter in the league when you played, I've said, well, it's the same player. It's the earth.
Yeah.
The earth is the hardest hit.
But he didn't hit the ground with his
head.
But
he didn't. Yeah. I mean, at least it didn't look like it. So, anyway, but Yeah, I mean, and then they're talking about, you know, possibly changing. Well, them. It was Colin Cowherd saying that they should change the date of the playoff game so that Patrick Mahomes can play. I mean, what? Come on, man. Yeah. So, I mean, what do you think's going to happen? I mean, the NFL, I get it. They want their superstars. But, I mean, shoot, he could have easily, you know, what if he dislocated his kneecap like he did? Was it last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, what, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on, number one, that hit, but then also just whether or not we should go that far to get, you know, all the quarterbacks healthy for the playoff games?
Well, first of all, that hit, it was nothing special, Dave. And you've got a lot of tackles in your career. I've been tackled a few times. That hit wasn't much. I slowed it down. I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, what was it that really – shook him up. I'm watching it with my son, and he's like, "Dad, man, that didn't even look like a bad hit." I'm like, "I know the game has changed. I don't know, but that wasn't a bad hit.
It was a collar choke.
It was, but that's part of it, man.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It was he tackled him. He didn't even hit him, and it was more of a choke that I've been the victim of many times in jiu-jitsu. You get choked out, but usually it takes about 7 seconds. I've never seen one like that. And they're saying he tweaked a nerve in his neck, that it wasn't,
could be worse. I mean, he'd probably be better off with just a straight concussion.
Yeah, I've never seen that kind of reaction from that, happen so rapidly. And I watched that play 20, when Dave sent me the article about the guy getting death threats, I'm like, are you bleeping kidding me? And I went back and watched the play over and over and over. Never once was his helmet touched by a body part or the ground.
Right. Well, and the guy was just playing football, and it was just a football play. But again, what worries me more, I guess, is that if Mack Wilson had hit him there, and it could have happened, because those kinds of hits happen all the time. Patrick Mahomes was a running back.
Yeah.
And you see some of the, and Frankie Louvu, when the Jets were here,
mm-hmm.
he's a Washington State guy. He killed Carlos Hyde, killed him. And, you know, I mean, it was a helmet-to-helmet shot that, you know, if you look at every single one of those, but now the quarterback's involved. And so now this guy's going to be a villain for playing football. That's the part that, I guess, worries me about the future. People are getting just a little bit too sensitive. I mean, you should look at that play and go, well, that's just football. And I think that's what you just said, Bump.
It wasn't a violent play. There were plays made in that game that were way more violent than that play. I think it just shows just how much people fall in love with, you know, the quarterbacks. Everyone wants to be a quarterback when they grow up. Everybody wants all the glitz and the glamour and all the shine. But as soon as you tuck that football and you start getting your shoulders north-south, you are not a quarterback anymore. You are a football player who is going to get hit. And this is a violent sport. It's almost like they're trying to eliminate the violence from a violent game.
Thank you.
It's not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
If you want to eliminate the violence, then let's put flags on them and call it what it is, and you're still going to get guys running into each other. That's just the way it is. And it's the data that really gets people going, right? Because they look at, Dave, like your generation, and then the tail end of my generation. Like we're the guys who have all the data showing, look, there's this brain damage, there's CTE, and now you have the information to make a decision in your life if you want to play this game or not. And I'm a small guy. Hit me up top, Dave. Do not go for my knees.
That's what I'm saying.
Do not go for my ankle. Hit me up top, and I understand the risk of playing this game. And the people who are complaining the most are dudes who never played the game. Oh, my God, this shouldn't be doing this. Well, you didn't play, so don't worry about it. We want to make it safe, but there's no way this game is going to be nonviolent. It's a violent game.
Yeah. Well, and trying to make it safe, you know, look, you could say it's a fool's errand because it's an unsafe game. There's no way around it. The thing I think that's bothering me the most is the super slow-mo. The super slow-mo, everybody judging the guy's reaction time. Look at that. He could pull up. No, this is happening in super slow motion. Out on the field, you know, I always say we got a blind corner in our hallways here, you know, in the station here. And, you know, sometimes you're walking and somebody's coming around the corner and you almost run into each other and you kind of flinch. Try not hitting the guy running full speed.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like out on the field. And so, you know, and these guys are running not full speed for a bunch of radio hosts, but full speed for a guy who's one of the best athletes in the world. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you put your head there. You know, you're to blame on and that split second decision. That's what worries me the most.
Can't do it. You can make it as safe as you'd like. I understand looking out for players. Listen, the biggest issue was back in the day they were withholding information from players.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know. Players know what's at risk, and they're signing up for it. So you assume risk.
And that's getting paid handsomely.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it's the same with MMA, same with boxing. You understand there's an inherent risk to participating in this, and this is what they are, and they're all out on the table. The problem was not so much that the game was causing CTE, it's that the teams were hiding what was happening.
Yeah.
That's no longer the case. So everybody's aware of what they're signing up for.
Exactly.
And I'm not saying don't, you know, take steps to improve equipment or make certain rule changes to help. But overall, you're right. It's a violent game, and injuries are going to happen. But everybody's on the same page. They understand that's part of it.
Right.
So there you go. All right. Coming up, Stacy Rost had an idea about a veteran running back the Seahawks could be looking at in the offseason. We'll talk about some possibilities at that spot. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus sitting in for the hour on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the professor, John Clayton, will join us. We'll talk more football with him. Right now, we've got Michael Bumpus in with us for one more segment. And, Bump, we've talked a lot about, you know, obviously the running game is front and center in the conversation because that's what everybody assumes Pete wants to do. Pete has said as much. Want to get back to that, the comfort of running the ball. Before we talk about possible additions, what do you think of what they've got moving forward? Let's pretend they re-sign Chris Carson and that Rashad Penny is healthy, and maybe they bring back Hyde, and then you still have DJ Dallas and Travis Homer. None of these guys have proven that they can get through an entire season healthy, especially Penny and Carson. You know, Dave loves him. I love who he is on the field, but Chris Carson has just not proven he's durable. Just that's the fact. So can they establish the run game that Pete wants them to with a group that is as unreliable physically as they have been?
When you put it that way, no. They're not reliable, but something inside of me thinks that they can make it through a season and be fairly healthy. That's what you want out of a three running back combo. You want your guys to be fairly healthy. They're playing running back. They're going to get banged up. I mean, you look at the Niners in their heyday. They have three really good running backs. The Rams have three good running backs right now. I think they can do it. And I think that Penny didn't get a fair shot this year, obviously because of the ACL injury. He came back. Things were just tight. I mean, it just happens. It takes a while to get back into the groove of things. So I'm not done with Penny yet. I still want to see him from week one and try to make it through. I think with Carson, you just have to be careful with his carries, and you have to listen to him and his body. He strikes me as a guy who's not going to tell you if he's banged up and say, "Coach, can I just take this day off? You know, I need to rest at practice today, Coach, or you know, give me several plays off and let me regroup myself." He seems like a guy who's going to want the rock whenever he can. Do they have enough to be successful with those three? If they can stay healthy, I think that they do have something, but I also think you have to explore all options. You have to see what's out there and see if maybe there's a guy who can fit what you need in a running back.
What was the story with Carson at the end of the year? I mean, I think he's somehow unfollowed. Do you know anything about, I don't know, the Twitter world? Unfollowed the Seahawks or something like that and seemed angry. I mean, I guess I never got the feeling that he had like a big chip on his shoulder or...
Why would he be mad at him? What did they...
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he thought that they didn't give him the ball enough or something. I'm not sure, but... Yeah, I mean, I think he's the complete package for what you want in a Pete Carroll type of running game. But, yeah, man, what do you say to the people that keep texting in about Nick Chubb?
It
really hurts. This one really bothers me, Bump, because, I mean, the dude was the third pick in the second round, and... You know, and you hear rumors and stories about who wanted him and who didn't. You know, maybe Shoddy felt like Rashad Penny. Yeah, that's it. We'll blame it on Shoddy since he got fired. but, you know, that he was maybe fit in, Rashad Penny fit in a little bit more. But I think you're probably right. You probably still have to give Rashad Penny a chance. I mean, he showed some ability. It's time, though. I'm like, okay, come on, man. I mean, this next year, you got to be ready to go. You need to show up and be the guy, and that's it. Otherwise, you know, I just feel like it's time to move on from somebody else.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Nick Chubb deal hurts a bit, but they went with who they thought fit their system. And you look at Nick Chubb doing it in the SEC, and then where's San Diego State? Mountain West, I believe.
Mountain West Conference.
Yeah. So you look at them on paper, you're like, yeah, why the heck didn't they do that? But end of the day, you have to go with your gut, your research, and believe in your team. It's not just Snyder. Snyder makes the final decision, but there's a group of scouts, there's coaches who have some input in this, and they just miss, man. Shoot, there are a lot of guys who miss first pick, second pick, third pick. Most picks in the NFL are misses anyway. People don't realize that. Like, most of these guys are misses. They never really live up to expectations unless you're, you know, a seventh-round pick like Carson. Now he has a chance to make his money. But, yeah, I'm with you. Penny needs to be a guy. He's going to have a full off season. He's going to be able to heal, get healthy. This is a make-or-break year for him, I believe. If you can sign Chris Carson, I think you need to sign Chris Carson. If you don't sign Chris Carson, I think you bring in a back who's – fast, a free agent you can get for cheaper than what Chris Carson is asking for, and just get a fast back, because Penny's looking like he can be the in between the tackles guy. He's put on that weight. I don't know if he plans on keeping it or not, but it looked like he was transforming into kind of a Chris Carson, to where he was kind of the speed outside guy. If you keep Chris Carson, then you explore and you look at veterans. Stacy, wrote a piece on Mark Ingram?
Yeah.
If you keep Chris Carson and you can get Mark Ingram in there, I think you do it. But you can't get rid of Chris Carson, then ask Ingram to be your number one guy.
I think I'd rather have Carlos Hyde than Mark Ingram. Personally. Mark Ingram didn't do much at all this year. He's 31 years old. If we're just talking about a backup, then I'm not that passionate about it. I mean, if they said, all right, we're going to bring in Ingram and Carlos is gone, I'm not going to throw a fit. I prefer Hyde. I like the way he runs, but he had trouble staying healthy this year. Couple other guys that are free agents out here that Morris got on the list. Aaron Jones, I didn't realize he was a free agent from Green Bay.
Me either.
I can't imagine they're going to let him go, though.
No.
He's a big part of what
they do
offensively, and he's only 26 years old. Philip Lindsay out of Denver, James Conner out of Pittsburgh. You got Kenyon Drake, Todd Gurley, Marlon Mack, James White, Leonard Fournette, all free agents. Anybody out there, any of those names really get you going?
Man, I'm really feeling Leonard Fournette. Now, he's valued at $8.1 million, I believe, coming in next year. But his style, that looks like, imagine Leonard Fournette running the zone and the trap and the power for the Seahawks and the play action. I just see his style of football, well, running the football, really fitting in to what Seattle likes to do. I like Kenyon Drake, but he's more of a hybrid guy. He's going to get outside. I don't think Todd Gurley is a good fit. Out of those guys, I would take a good look at Leonard Fournette and then, like I mentioned, Mark Ingram, because they seem like guys who like to run between the tackles and who like to just run hard. We need guys. What the two most successful running backs these past 10 years have been Marshawn Lynch, runs hard. Chris Carson, runs hard. That's the type of back you need.
Yeah, Philip Lindsay is kind of interesting. I mean, here was a guy that I don't believe was drafted. And if he was, it was a late draft choice. But the kid from Denver, that was kind of a feel-good story. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of like Carlos Hyde as well. I like his cutback ability. The thing about him, it looked like he was looking to cut it back even before he got the ball in his hand. So he's got great vision. But, yeah, if you just want to go with the complete – it's such a tough one. This is going to be – I mean, we talked to Bob Condotta yesterday. No shortage of things to write about in this offseason. We talked a little bit about the corners. But the running back in that situation, look what happened to the Panthers, man. They signed Christian McCaffrey to this $16 million deal. I think he played in four games that they lost all four of them.
Yeah, had multiple injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike Davis became the guy.
Wow.
Former Seahawk.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's, I mean, running back, I don't know, are you one to spend money bump on running backs, or are you thinking just get a stable and we'll go with the 1-2-3 punch?
I mean, it depends on what that running back can do for you. If you got one of these, Kamara, McCaffrey, a guy who's going to be a factor in the pass game as well, then I think you spend a bit of money. But if you don't have old linemen who are going to protect your quarterback and create those lanes for those running backs, then you don't spend that money. You focus on that offensive line. First order of business, I feel like, is just to get that offensive line right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's potential there. Damian Lewis, for a rookie, he played great. He got his butt kicked against Aaron Donald, but who doesn't? He did a lot
Packers.
Of good things. Well, he was hurt. He had a rib issue. But if he can continue to grow, I think they'll be fine. There are just other spots, man. You got to get younger and better on that offensive line. I think these guys did have a decent season, but when your quarterback is sacked a bunch of times and when it comes down to win ball games, you can't do what you want to do, which is run the football. You got to look at that O-line.
Bump, good stuff, man. Always fun to talk to you. We appreciate it, and we'll be talking soon.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There you go. Michael Bumpus, everybody. Always good to spend some time talking Seahawks football with him. We'll talk more football, talk NFL, the whole league, whatever you got on your mind. Text in your questions for John Clayton. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. The professor will join us next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.